John Panos, John McGrath, Troy Malcolm, Million Dollar Agent. And guys, I have just... We did a Q&A last week and the week before. We've done a stretch of Q&A.
It's a streak.
Yeah, we should put that on our little app. Streaks. Q&A.
I love Q&A. I do love Q&A because it's real. It's real. These questions are coming into us and they are real, what people are facing in our industry. And, you know, it's rare. Sometimes they don't want to ask the question to their principals or their sales managers. So I think it's a great forum. So keep the questions coming
and
in.
And we keep them all anonymous unless they don't want to. I mean, some do and some don't mind. But any sensitive questions, we're happy to keep anonymous or private.
Yes. So let's move on to this one. I go to a lot of listings, follow them up, provide lots of information, and 2 weeks later, I seem to miss out to other agents. I feel that vendors are using me to get an idea of the value of their home, what my fee is, but they already have a predetermined idea on an agent that they want to go with. Is there something I can be doing in the process to overcome this issue?
I think it's a good question. Every agent in the country, certainly every listener, I'm sure, has had a similar experience. So the first thing I would say to this Q&A person is you have to change your story, because if you're in there, you have a chance. Even if their brother, sister is a real estate agent, even if their husband, wife is a real estate agent, at the end of the day, 9 out of 10 people will list with the best agent that comes across and leaves no doubt they will get the most amount of money for the property. So I see this as often an excuse, either an excuse sometimes Tom, a vendor, will give to someone. Look, Tom, really, you're fantastic. It was such a hard decision, but, you know, I've known Troy for a number of years and he sold our last property, so we kind of... So a lot of people will then say, aha, Troy was always going to get it. My view is Troy was going to get it until a better option came up. And I'm afraid to say to this particular person, I'm not being cruel, but you weren't a better option. So the first thing I think you have to change your story about that. If you get a look in, if you get to connect and speak with someone, you get to meet at their property, even if as you arrive, they're thinking I'm fee checking, I just want to get a second opinion, I'm not going to go with this person, you can change that in an hour by being brilliant. So that'd be the first thing. I remember the story Con told Troy about when Con Stathopoulos, our sales director, sold his property in Melbourne. And basically, you know, without going into too much detail, but there were four agents. One was kind of the best agent in the marketplace in terms of, you know, had all the listings and was, you know, kind of considered the best. And second, third, fourth, Con thought, look, I may as well, you know, just speak to the top four. But he had a very clear view as to who was kind of the most likely second, third, fourth. He actually ended up giving it to the fourth because exactly this reason. They impressed him so much. And he said the first was very good. But he said the fourth, whatever it was about them, and I should recall, I'll try, we should get Con on Monday on this. He's well worth a conversation. Mm. But the fourth, and he just tells a story about it. Doesn't matter where you are. All that matters is you're there. So that comes back to prospecting and attracting and actually getting invited in on the list. And then once you're there, it matters that you impress the hell out of them. And whatever this particular agent that in his mind was fourth when he invited them in did, elevated them in an hour up to first. So I think it comes back to, again, great agents do the basics exceptionally well. Like and trust you. First thing is if I like and trust you. If I don't get through that barrier or that gate, I'm not even in the running. So you have to be a likable person. You have to have a personality that's clear of baggage, clear of anger, that's likable, that's warm, that connects with people. Two is you have to be able to ask the questions that get the vendors thinking about things they hadn't even thought about themselves, about their property and their listing and their journey going forward. Third thing is you have to be a brilliant pitcher. You have to be able to P-I-T-C-H. You have to be able to tell a set of stories and case studies and examples and take them on a journey where they say, wow, that sounds incredible. So A is I like and trust this person, so I want to work with them. B is they ask me some great questions, so I reckon they really know who I am and what I'm about, and they know.
John, do you think one of those questions should be, do you have an existing relationship with an agent at somewhere in the process?
Funny, Tom, it's a bit controversial because I have never asked anyone, are you interviewing other agents? But I know a lot of good agents that do. I just personally have always felt that was their business, not mine, and I didn't want to focus on my competition, I wanted to focus on my game. And... Yeah, by the way, sometimes they actually weren't going to interview anyone else. I didn't want to give them the thought they had to or I was expected to. So I just went on the assumption that they were serious about selling, And if I was the best, they'll sign up with me. That was kind of my mindset, and I kept it nice and simple. So I think that if you do that job of absolute mastery, and then the last one, which I didn't get to, of course, is closing. So the difference between a great person that's great at telling a story and listening and a great agent is often the fact that one asks for the business at the end. So you have to be able to get to a point, you've taken them on a journey, and you've answered their questions, you've checked during the presentation, and then it seems logical. In fact, it's almost offensive if you don't ask for the business. I used to think the most natural way to end a great presentation, when I turned up, I did my homework before I arrived, I asked great questions, I was a great active listener, they seemed to like and trust me, I gave them a great solution to their problem, I gave them a great plan to go forward. If I did all of that and didn't ask, are you ready to go, or would you like to start with me, or would you like me to look after sale your property?
John, you have so beautifully on a number of times on videos asked a closing question that did not sound like a closing question. I think that's
this ability to
ask for the business without feeling like you're asking me to do something that I'm not going to be comfortable with. And we haven't got the time to do the whole presentation.
We should do a role play on listing, a bit more detail on listing, yeah. And which will include closing. But it was funny, I was the same guy I was mentioning before that I was coaching this week. Good young guy, got potential, but a bit rough around the edges. And I said that to him. And, I asked him to role play to me a listing presentation. And, you know, he was a 6 out of 10 maybe. Because he said the same thing to me. He said, I went to one, and I think they were just checking me for fees and they were always going to use this other agent. And, I sort of said to him, no, the problem is you're okay. Being okay is not good enough. You should have blown my mind. I'm sitting here as the founder of the company and I've asked you to role play with me, and I should have said, my God, geez, you're good. So I said, you've got to go back to listing school 101 and learn the way through it. So, you get, and then he said, it's funny doing it in a role play. I said, why? Should be no different, really. I'm having a conversation. Just pretend, suspend your disbelief momentarily that they've started the business and now all of a sudden I'm just someone thinking of selling a house. What would you say to me? And you need to be able to switch to that and be comfortable. So I think it really comes back to, if you have a shot at the business, there's only two reasons you don't get every piece of business. They didn't invite you in, or they didn't like you when you got in there. Or they like someone more is probably better, because a lot of agents nowadays, they like them, but someone more. So if you're in there, in the lounge room, I'll guarantee you have a chance, 99 out of 100. There may be someone that says, look, I don't care how good you are, I'm going to go with the second, third best agent just because I can't afford not to. Anyway, we talk about family members. Maybe literally it's their brother, and they're saying this will cause World War III in the family. And I used to sell a lot of agents' properties. And if that situation arose, I would say to them, well, why don't we do it together? I think your brother is a really good agent. I think I'm the best agent. I think your brother's a really good agent. Why doesn't he and I do a conjunction and we'll both handle it together? Would that work for you? Because if that's a problem for the vendor, if their problem is they don't want World War III, which I get, I'm going to try and find a solution. I'm not just after the commission. I'd like to get involved. I'm competitive. I'd like to handle it for them. But if it helps them by me doing it with a family member, that's fine. So I think it's a story people tell themselves, and they've got to stop telling themselves a story.
So Johnny, what you're saying is you don't dispute the fact that there may be rapport, history, trust. It's a bit like a sporting analogy. You're going into the game and you're probably 12-0 down, but you can win the game.
Correct.
If you are that good, they might have an advantage for whatever reason it is, but what you're saying is you can still win that game if you are significantly better than them.
100%.
And you can't be just a little bit better. You've probably got to be...
Well, you should be demonstrably better, so it should be clear. You don't have to be 100% better. It's funny, I remember Troy, and I won't try and quote it because I don't remember, and I'll butcher the quote, but there was a story a long time ago about Tom Brady. So you guys have heard Tom Brady?
Yep.
Patriots quarterback. Like legendary, right? He's won six. Super Bowl after Super Bowl. And there was this, I think it was a coach of his, and either a coach or a teammate. No, it was a teammate. And he said, the funny thing about Brady is, he said, didn't matter what the score was at halftime, if Brady was on your team, you knew you were probably going to win. Because he said there was something about Brady, no matter what the weather was, what the score was, whatever, he was a winner and he knew how to win. And you always had this confidence, even if there was like 60 seconds to go and you were down, if you were within you know, the score, if, you know, a score would get you there. He said Brady would do it. And I think it's like in, what was the other sporting analogy, Troy, Billy Beane? He talks about, he's talking about, he gets on base.
Gets on base.
He said, you know, that guy, I want to hire him because he gets on base, because he actually gets the job done. And I think there's something about, unfortunately, Tom, being a Balmain follower, you may not know about the winning spirit.
How's that going for you?
Well, let me give you my sporting quote. It comes from Tyson. Everyone's got a plan until you get punched in the face. I love that quote.
Well, hang on,
we're the Tigers.
I think we're only 1 point ahead of you on the ladder or something, so I shouldn't talk to you. No, I think there's something about people that walk in and someone says, look, I've got to be really honest with you. And I don't know, I want to waste your time, but, you know, my brother's a real estate agent. They say, fine, I'm sure he's a great agent. Who is he? You know, Billy Beane. Oh, great. Well, I'd love to work with him if you feel he should be involved with the sale. But hopefully at the end of our meeting today, you will feel that I'm the best person to represent you. And then let's talk about how do we involve Billy.
Mm. Yeah. So you're up front with them straight away and you're having that conversation.
Well, you just got to have the confidence, Troy. Yeah. And if your story is, oh, my God, this means I've got no chance of getting this business. If that's what you tell yourself in that instant, excellent, I'll find out a way. And I would often say to people, look, Billy's, you know, I'll use the word Billy Beane. You know, Billy's not in this area. So if you feel comfortable, Tom, with me handling it, I will make sure that Billy gets a referral or Billy can introduce buyers. Or if he can add value, we'll do it together. So I never tried to squeeze anyone out, but I also didn't want to have someone who's purely a passenger for the sake of it, because that felt inauthentic. So I would always, you know, try and find a way for the vendor to do business with me, make it easy. But I think you got a chance, even if you are not in the lounge room and you've heard that they're going to go with another agent, get on the phone and just get in there.
And even if you're up against a Peter Chuancy, you'd still have a chance. And we'll touch on Peter because earlier in the week, John, you'd sent me an email. Mm-hmm. A guy that's got 90% market share of the top 10 sales and 70% market share of his total market.
Yeah, so the stats are easy.
That's absolutely staggering, because we freak out when we see an agent having 50% market share, right?
Yeah.
Imagine that one in two people out of all the choices in the world would pick you. This guy, 9 in 10 people...
sold. There was 9 out of 10 sold... So what it was, is you were at our awards night a few weeks ago, Tommy, where...
Jeez, John, big those numbers, because a lot of those guys there through the gym or through relationships or through McGrath's over the years, and I know what they write, and I know... But those numbers this year went to another level.
Matt Steinway's just... He's broken away from the pack, and he is... You know, he's over 5 million and he's just riding tremendous business in a market which is not a major city market. It's not Sydney or Melbourne, Central Coast. Yeah, which is a beautiful place, but it's not the Sydney and Melbourne prices. Anyway, it took Matt Steinway to beat Pete Chauncey, but as you said, I sent fairly recently an email around to our team because I just saw Pete's stats, and he has 72% market share in the last 12 months. So not in a month, 12 months. So it's sustained effort in his market, which is highly competitive, a lot of good agents against him, number one. And out of the top 10 sales in the last 12 months, he sold 9, so by price. He had 9 out of the 10, and that's just a phenomenal, I think, you know, for anyone in any industry, let alone one as competitive as real estate and competitive as inner Sydney or lower North Shore, is a great. So we haven't had Pete on MDA, have we?
No, we've got to have him on. We're going to have him on. I actually spoke to him, and the day he was coming on, he had to go to Brisbane. But here's the deal. If I'm a vendor in his marketplace, I can't help it but think to myself, that he most likely will end up having a conversation with the buyer of my property, regardless of whether I list with him or not. He has reached a level. I mean, I know McGrath's use Epic or use Pinnacle, where essentially he's going to be advising people on the marketplace. That is a really dominant position to be. I think once you get to a certain number, John, market share, it does become 100%. Difficult to be ignored.
Well, I talk about, Tom, going from inertia to momentum, and then you know you get the feedback loop, and then you hit runaway success. Where you know, and look, Pete, you got to stay paranoid. Even as good as Pete is, you know, if someone's hungrier tomorrow, and they go in, there's a chance they'll get one listing from him, and then a second listing, and then they can grow. So. Yeah, Pete is very aware that as much momentum as he has, he's got to stay paranoid and he's got to work just as hard for the next one as he did for the last
12 months or the last 100 so that he did in the last 12 months. So, but I'd love to have him on MDA, Troy, because not only is, like Matty Steinway and Betty and all of our top people, not only is he a phenomenal agent, he's a phenomenal human being. And I like that most of all, is when you find agents that are just wonderful people. So we should bring him on as a special guest.
Yeah, we'll bring him
find
on.
Out how he does it. Let's just put the question to him and say, how did, the hell did you get to 72%? He used to sell beds. He was a mattress salesman before he joined us. So what about that?
Unbelievable. Pretty good.
Nothing wrong with mattress salespeople, but, you know, like, he just came from humble beginnings, came on board, and Shane Smolin, and, you know, kind of gave him a lot of great tips in the early days, and he, to his credit, embraced them, and now he's legendary.
Troy, good to see you.
Good to see you.
You're riding high, mate. Things, mate, I've got to tell you, it's been a great month. Troy Malcolm, Auctioneer of the Year. He's run the Auctioneers Conference. He smashed the Haberfield record.
I know.
Mate, it is, you're going through a good spell, but nothing beats failure like success. Remember that.
Stay paranoid, Troyzy.
All right, guys, see you
next
week.
Thank you, Tommy. Good to be here. See you.